Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the initial Women's Motorsports Network radio show, coming to you from the offices of the International Women's Motorsports Association, Melinda Russell. Melinda Russell, welcome to your very first show.
Hey, Woody, thank you so much. I appreciate your help tonight running the board because I have no clue how that works. And I also want to say thank you to you and Drew Jack for encouraging me and getting me started on these radio shows. You may have created a monster. So I just wanted to give you guys a shout out first and foremost because I wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for the two of you. So thank you so much for that. And I guess here we go. We're going to get started. So
right,
this
then.
Is the – pardon?
No, have a good show.
Okay, I will. Thanks, Woody. So this is the inaugural show for the Women's Motorsports Network Racing. And if you are not familiar with that, that's because it's brand new. It's a division, if you will, of the International Women's Motorsports Association, which was founded actually last August. The idea came to me at that time, and we officially launched our website and everything on November 15th. So we're still rather brand new. The International Women's Motorsports Association was founded to connect and celebrate women in any capacity of any age involved in any type of motorsports now or in the past. So if you work at a track or you own a track or you drive a car, maybe you're on the pit crew, maybe you're just a race fan. We couldn't do it without the race fans. So this association is for all of you. I have a lot of men who are also supporting our association. So if you want to catch us on Facebook, go to our page. It's the International Women's Motorsports Association. We would love for you to like and share our page with all the people you know. And our website is iwmanation.com. And you can go there and please go there and check out our website. There's memberships available for people to join and support us, and we'd love to have you go there and see what we have to offer for women and men, really, around the world involved in motorsports. So tonight we're going to have our first guest. His name is Tom Pollard. Tom founded the World Motorsports Breast Cancer Foundation, and he and I have met, although he doesn't remember, but I do. A few years ago, I actually had a booth at the Chicago Motorsports Show, and he'll have to tell us the actual name of it, I forget. But I had a booth there for send-out cards and how motorsports teams and tracks and things could use send-out cards in their business. And I actually remember meeting him and had his booth, and I actually had picked up a couple things from his booth at the time, and that was probably, I'm going to say, 4 or 5 years ago. He connected back with me recently through Facebook about the International Women's Motorsports Association, and through our conversations asked if I would be an ambassador for the group, which I'm honored to be. And the online monthly magazine that I publish called IWMA Nation News, we are the official publication for the World Motorsports Breast Cancer Foundation. I don't know why I have such a time saying that. I believe Tom might be on the line with us. Tom, are you there?
Tom is not on the line yet. We'll let you
okay.
know when
he's
on the line.
Okay, he said he was calling, so
all right.
Woody, his number
I'll let you
is
know when
eight.
He's
on. Okay, his number starts with 847. So when you see that calling in, then just let me know. So anyway, I met him mostly really through Facebook is how we've connected, and I'm excited to say that I'm going to be hopefully a huge part of that organization, helping raise funds and getting the word out through the magazine and through our website about that organization. I am a 13-year survivor of breast cancer, so this organization is near and dear to my heart. And, you know, you hear in the the news all the time. Cancer's all around us, all kinds of cancer. And so if there's something we can do for women who race or women involved in motorsports who are going through this, then I say the more we can do for them, the better. So I'm anxious to connect with him tonight and have him tell us more about what he's doing. I thought he was calling Woody, so let me send him a message here real quick. So this is going to be a weekly show, weekly show that will go out on Wednesday nights between 7 and 8 p.m. We won't always have women as our interviews. Sometimes we'll have some men, like we're going to have tonight with Tom, and I see that he's going to join us here in a second. So if you know someone who you think would make a great interview for us, or if you would make a good interview, then please get a hold of me on Facebook, and we will get that scheduled. I'm scheduling out for the next 3 months, and so I would love to have you join us. So, Tom, I think you're on the line with us. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Good, Tom. Good to have you. You didn't hear the part where I was talking, saying that probably about 5 years ago, I had a booth at the show in Chicago that you just did. I had a booth for send-out cards, and I actually met you that weekend, but I know you don't remember because you meet too many people. But I've just given them a little background about the foundation that you have, and so I want to start from the top. I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself and how you founded this organization and why, and the floor is yours. Just tell us as much as you can about what you do, how you do it, and how we can help.
Okay. well, my background is in education. I was a wrestling coach, high school and college, for several years. I worked with the Olympic Committee, the national governing body here in the United States. And through the educational aspect of it, I basically have traveled the work scenario quite a bit. I've done quite a few different things in my life other than being a wrestling coach and teaching at the college and high school level. About 15 years ago, I basically was involved in the motorsports industry. I was working with a custom car shop as a general manager, and attending SEMA, I bumped into an individual who was promoting a breast cancer charity, and what he was offering and stuff like that, I was intrigued as to why he wasn't having much success type of thing. So I basically volunteered and made several attempts to try to help him promote his charity and try to get it further along. That really didn't work out because, like some of the charities that are out there, I basically found out that too much of the money that was being raised was being siphoned off into administrative costs, which for me was hard to take. I don't understand that process at all. So dealing with my parents, who were both ill, my dad had Parkinson's, who he passed away from that, and then my mom, who was dealing with bone cancer and passed away from that. I through the efforts of my mother, basically encouraging me to do something, step up and try to change the course of many of the charities and provide help for the individuals. So 10 years ago, I basically founded the World Motorsports Breast Cancer Foundation, combining a few of the things that I really enjoyed, which was the motorsports industry and trying to educate and women, especially younger women, about breast cancer and trying to get them the information that they need so that they didn't have to go through breast cancer in general. When I was taking my mother to chemo and stuff like that, that's when I really got firsthand information on individuals going through chemo and everything. Discovered that many of the women that were in attendance there didn't have any support system, or didn't seem like they did. They did have, you know, sons and daughters and family, but they just didn't seem to be able to handle the issues. So they were attending chemo on their own, trying to get to it and get home from it and stuff like that. And then also discovering that many of them were concerned about paying their bills, not only just the medical bills, but their household bills. And this was strange for me, because my parents had good insurance and had prepared for the inevitable and stuff like that. But even so, it was a discovery to find out that patients don't have a support system in many cases. I had left basically working as a general manager of a custom car shop to take full-time take care of my parents, and which allowed me to take my parents to, you know, their treatments and stuff like that. If that hadn't been the case, then yes, my parents would have been in the same boat that many other individuals are too. Going through that, when my mom was still alive, she kind of impressed upon me that there are other individuals that aren't as fortunate as that she was, and that somebody needs to step up. So during the period of time that I've created the foundation, I had already created it when my mom was going through this and everything, but she was a major influence as to these are things that you should consider to try to correct this type of issue. So the evolution of the charity has been that 100% of any donations that we receive go to a program that we have established. As an example, we have Annie's Mini Grant, which basically provides financial help for household bills, groceries, or medical bills that the individual basically can't afford to pay. The insurance doesn't pay or something like that. And so doing, we step up, we take the bill and we pay it for the individual, as long as they have qualified for the program. We have several different programs that are basically set up that way. We have a scholarship program, as an example. There's a veterans program for veterans that are going through cancer issues that the VA doesn't cover, specifically for immediate families and stuff like that. So we've established several programs, and most people are pretty surprised to find out that they can, one, decide what program they can support, and that 100% of their donation, be it a dollar or be it $1,000, will go to specifically that program. Mm-hmm. And it's been kind of a different outlook. In so doing, I've tried to be as transparent as I think is possible. As an example, let's say if somebody gave us $100, that will immediately be deposited into the bank or the fund specifically for our donations. I send the individual a copy of the deposit. then that deposit, once it's into the bank and it's established, like if they send us a check, we have to wait 10 days for it to process and stuff like that. Then it transfers over to our basically our trust fund program, which is Edward Jones. It goes into an Edward Jones account specifically for, let's say, Annie's Mini Grant or what have you. Again, we send the individual the deposit, a copy of the deposit that was made into the account. So they've now received two, let's say, receipts or verifications of their funds going into an account specifically that they've wanted. They can then go to our Facebook page, and we have periodically we'll post when we're doing something more active than right now, because right now we're in between shows, so there's not a lot of activity. But they can go to our Facebook page. They will see a sliding scale of all the current programs that we have and how much money is in there. So as an example, the $100 or $1,000 that the individual has donated, they will see, let's say, Annie's Mini Grant move approximately that amount.
Okay.
And therefore, they have current visibility of where the funds have gone and where they're at. That's basically how I've established that. Now, each program we've set up so that once there's $5,000 in that program, it automatically transfers. The program changes from what I call an account holding program into an actual trust fund. And therefore, let's say once there's $5,000 in the program, that program is then generating dollars unto itself.
Okay.
And my goal for some of the programs is, as I've been told, is pretty lawful, but I think it has to be. I'm a firm believer that instead of you giving funds year in and year out and not seeing any basic results, that if you put it into a trust fund like we've tried to establish, it becomes self-perpetuating. And in, say, 10 years or 20 years maximum, you don't have to provide any donations anymore because the fund is growing on its own. And
right.
An example I use when I've talked to people with money, I basically say, look, if we take any program, and I use muscular dystrophy, let's drop back 20 years and take the first 10 years and take the first $50 million that was raised off of the Memorial Day fundraiser that Jerry Lewis used to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Put that first $50 million into a trust fund. And then at the end of the 10 years, don't touch it for another 10 years. But, yes, still do your donations, your programs, and stuff like that. Give the money away. Do with as you will. At the end of the 20-year period of time, basically you have over $1 billion a year to give away, which is more than what they raise in a single year.
Wow. Pretty amazing.
Yeah. So now instead of trying to raise, say, $200 or $300 million a year, you have $1 billion to give away that you basically, according to the federal laws, you have to give it away. I don't think, well, it would be very ideal if we could, our programs could reach that type of a goal. Then we could service quite a few people. You know, so like Annie's Mini Grant, instead of $500 a month, we could say, okay, we're going to help you with $1,000 worth of your bills every month, and we can help support, say, 10,000 women who have, or men who have breast cancer.
Right.
So things would dramatically change as to how we could go out and effectively help individuals. And that's really the overall objective of the foundation, is to try to raise enough awareness, one, that people will understand where their hard-earned money that they're donating to us will go and how it will definitely affect individuals. And it's been a struggle. I mean, we're in our 10th year. We've done, on average, about 25 to 35 events every year, which means basically
that
we're going to...
That's a lot of events when you're kind of a one-man show, aren't you?
Yeah. Unfortunately, this year, I've had to actually cancel attending events just because of the fact that my health is such that I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
The last show, basically, I had to take 4 days totally off and just basically I wound up sleeping majority of the time. And I'm still dealing with the cold and everything that well, some people think I have the flu, but I think it's just the cold. To deal with basically the issues that are involved. Most people don't understand, but when you say you're going to an event, if one has seen any pictures of our booth, okay, there's a lot of material that gets taken out and set up. And it normally takes me by myself about 3.5 to 4 hours to set it up if I don't get any distractions. As an example, at the last show, the recent performance show, it took me almost 5 hours to take the booth down.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a pop-up tent. I just had, you know, five tables, our cubicles and merchandise.
Mm-hmm.
But it's taking it down, packing it up, then putting it into in a truck, and it has to go in a certain way. Otherwise, things don't fit.
Right.
But it's more than anything, it's really time. There was another individual or a couple other individuals and they knew what how things worked, you're probably looking at maybe tops 2 hours,
mm-hmm.
type of thing. But when it's one person, it takes a lot.
Yeah.
But it's nothing that I'm not happy about. It's something that's got to get done.
Right.
But I feel that you have to be in front of the population, because what I have found by doing the events, because we hand out all our educational material is provided free.
Yeah.
We're one of the few charities that I'm aware of that you don't have to pay for the educational material. You come
mm-hmm.
to the booth, we hand it out. You're going to host an event. You want our information to hand to your participants. You just got to let me know how many pieces that you need, and we ship it out.
Right.
So you're not
and
paying
that
for...
And that's not free to get printed, right?
No, that's not.
Somebody pays somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't found a printer yet that is willing to do that, because it gets to be expensive. I've looked at it, and I now understand why some of the companies, you know, charge. But then it just doesn't get into the hands of the individuals that need it most. So that's one of the aspects that we're providing, is free educational material. We don't. When anybody comes to us and say, "Look, we want to do a fundraiser for you," I say, "Great." We hand out the individual forms for them to fill out, and then we provide the individual with a sanction form that they could post or prove to people that we have approved of the event that they are hosting.
Okay.
Because they in turn already have signed off. They've said that what program they want to support and so forth. We have dates, and then we in turn try to promote that to get people who may not be aware of their event that they're trying to host for us to actually show up. So I kind of try to work hand in hand with the people that do want to help us. That's one reason why now we have our ambassador program, which is basically females of all ages who happen to be involved in the motorsports industry, who race from right now, go out and they basically represent us at zero cost to them. So you might see an individual at a racetrack, a drag race, let's say, going down the strip, and one of our logos decals will be on their vehicle, or go to their booth and you might see one of our design T-shirts or our flag or something. And they will all have free educational material on their table with their hero cards and stuff like that for individuals to pick up.
Right.
So we're trying to reach, well, let me back up here. I kind of believe everybody's trying to raise money for a cure. I kind of believe that the younger the women that we can approach to educate them about breast cancer and breast health and try to live healthier lives and be aware of certain aspects of what's in the environment and things like that. And basically an educational aspect. We can educate the individuals that if they do contract breast cancer, they will have a better chance of finding out, going to a doctor, and being diagnosed early.
Mm-hmm.
So as an example, if you catch breast cancer in stage one, you have a 99% chance of recovery. And to me, that's fear. So we come back to education, and our ambassadors are basically trying to put information in front of individuals. Is this is what you should be looking for. Don't be afraid to go to your doctor. I tell husbands and significant others, look, you should be going to the doctor with your significant other. And when she says there's nothing wrong, you have to jump in there and say, no, there is something wrong. When my mother had me go for the first time to see her oncologist, she was embarrassed because I stopped the doctor and said, no, that isn't what's happening. This is what's occurring. You need to make these changes type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the type of person that is pretty belligerent. might be a good word. I will get in your face about what I believe is going on. My background, I do have a PhD. My master's is in exercise physiology. So I have an understanding of how the body functions and stuff like that. And in some cases, I can talk the talk that the medical profession talks. And so I basically got in front of him and I said, look, this is what's occurring. These are the results. I put down on paper my mother's heart rate and blood pressure readings. I had descriptions of how when she took her medication, what the results were afterwards and stuff like that. So I became the eyes and ears of the doctor who wasn't there when she was going through certain things. And so the husband in many cases or boyfriend can be the individual saying, look, when she takes this medication, this is what happens. Is this normal or is this not normal? The doctors I have worked with in the past, the good ones anyway, understand that the more information that they have, the better treatment they can provide.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that my discovery of some women going in and talking to doctors and saying, oh, he's such a wonderful person, blah, blah, blah. And I say, but he works for you. Why aren't you telling him what's wrong? And one woman basically said, well, I don't want to upset him. Well, that's his job.
Exactly.
She wasn't very happy with me because I told her, I says, you're not going to be dating this person. He's working for you to save your life. So tell him what's wrong. Don't exaggerate, but basically give him your personal feelings of you take the medication and this is what's happening and you're throwing up all over the place. So can you change the medication so I don't throw up all over the place? Things like that. And so, when I've spoken to breast cancer victims, sometimes they think I'm pretty hard, but you're dealing with your life.
Right.
And there's no reason why you shouldn't be expressing yourself to the person who's there to try to help save your life.
Yes.
As you
well know, I could relate to a lot of the things you're saying.
Yes.
I've been through it. Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm more concerned about reaching the younger women, because we're seeing younger women today contracting breast cancer at an earlier age.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I get upset with the national organizations, where they're still telling you women not to do anything until you're 50, 60 years old, and you could actually be stage four by that time.
Right.
I had a girl that was we encountered, who actually helped us for a period of time at different shows. She found a lump when she was 25. I met her when she was 30, and she told me that she had a lump, but that her doctor kept saying, oh, it's nothing, you're too young, and so forth. And I went ballistic on her to the point where she was actually crying. I said, look, you find a better doctor. Get a better doctor. Well, eventually she did, and within 3 weeks she was operated on.
Wow.
And she did have breast cancer now. She's 30. Well, now she's 35. But she's a 35-year-old female that has to be checked twice a year. And in my opinion, when she was 25, if the doctor would have went in, checked her out, said, did whatever he needed to do. Let's say it would have been simple, minor operation. They would have taken the lump or tumor, whatever it may have been, taken it out, got rid of it. She'd be free and basically going in maybe once every couple of years to be evaluated to see if anything else developed. Big difference between having cancer and not having cancer. So that's my concern, is with younger women who are being told, that's nothing, you're too young. To me, it's like, you find something, doctor should check it. And do what is necessary in order to save the life. To me, it's, we have a saying here, it's our logo and everything is Save the Knockers, but basically it's, if we can save the woman first, that's our main objective. If we save the woman, we then save the knockers.
Exactly.
And that's, our whole objective. And that's where I feel that education becomes a critical thing. And then trying to resolve the issues that the individuals, the family, basically go through when they discover that they do have it. And I like to try to tell women it's not a death sentence. It's something that, yes, it's going to be a struggle depending on what stage you may be in. But today, it's better than, I had an aunt in the 50s who passed away from breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was a death sentence. And
right.
Basically, I remember I was just, still in grade school, and the entire family just saying, okay, what are we going to do, because she's going to die.
Yes.
And today, that's not the case. So and especially with all the different ways for women to discover, you know, what is actually going on, and especially educating younger women, there's no reason why, to me, we can't have a cure. And that, to me, the cure is self-examination, catching everything at an early stage, and doing something about it. You increase your chances of survival, you know, exponentially. So
right.
But
yeah,
that,
absolutely.
I mean, that's just me. I know I'm different from that aspect. I run the charity differently than a lot of the other charities are. It comes to a point where everybody says, well, how do you operate? How do you continue? Well, that's where our merchandise that we have, the T-shirts and different items. When you attend an event that we're at, you see a lot of different items that are all motorsports oriented, but also breast cancer oriented.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the women are happy that we're at motorsports events because there's something for the women, but also the men are because of the fact that we have something for them to take home for their wives or their girlfriends.
Right.
You've probably heard this. Men repeatedly say, well, I don't wear pink. I say, well, that's fine. How about a black T-shirt that says Save the Knockers?
Yeah.
Or a blue shirt. We have all different types of colors for you to choose from, so you don't have that excuse anymore. You can still support the program, and you don't have to wear pink if you feel that you don't. Then I usually turn around and say, you know, pink is very stylish.
Yeah.
So
it takes a bold man to wear pink. That's what I would say to them. Oh, are you afraid of pink?
Right. And I am surprised that the men that I encounter, even young men that say, well, they wouldn't wear pink. And I can't figure that one out whatsoever.
Yeah.
That's when I turn around and say, well, fine. I see that you're wearing a black T-shirt. Would you wear a black T-shirt that has, you know, Save the Knockers on, or, you know, check your gauges or whatever type of thing, whatever I may have there at the moment that I can put in their face. Then they usually say, well, you don't have a shirt large enough for me.
Yeah.
Love that one.
You know, I think it's an uncomfortable subject in some ways for men. It's very private, and just like a lot of cancer is, different parts of your body. A lot of people are very, private about that, and it's a personal thing. And I know from experience, I actually met my husband when I was going through, right after I had completed my first round of chemo, and I had just lost my hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I met him. It's a long and interesting story. I'm not going to tell it on the radio. But I met him, and the very first thing, the first night that we went out, he asked me if I would go on a motorcycle ride.
Mm-hmm.
And it never occurred to me that I was wearing a wig and I'd have to put a helmet on. Never occurred to me. So when he picked me up that day, I put the helmet on over my wig because he had no idea that I was going through this. You know, I'm not telling somebody on a first date, mm-hmm. right?
No,
and I put the helmet on. We went to lunch, and we made two other stops, and I took the helmet on and off three times without ever disturbing the wig. He had no idea I was going through cancer and had just lost my hair. Until the end of the date when he asked me if he could take me out again, and I then said to him, well, I would love to do that, but this is what I'm going through, and I don't know how I'm going to be feeling the next few months.
Mm-hmm.
And he was my rock. There's no doubt in my my mind that God sent him to me. He connected us for a reason, and he went to every chemo treatment with me. He made sure I was eating, and I was a single mom with two teenage daughters. So, you know, that was it's a cool story, but a lot of people reached out to me when I was going through it and said, well, you know, what can I do to help you? Just let me know if there's anything I can do to help. Well, I know now because I've been through it. When we say that to someone, they're not ever going to call us more times
right.
than not. Because I was a very independent, single mother, and I was not going to lean on anybody that I didn't have to. And luckily, Mark, my husband, you know, boyfriend at the time, took very good care of me. But and my daughters were in, they were like seventh grade and freshmen. So they were young, and they were in denial somewhat that their mom had cancer. And so you've got to be proactive. If you know someone that has not just breast cancer, any kind of disease, really,
right.
don't say to them, well, let me know if you need anything, because they're never going to call you. If,
right.
You know.
It's your responsibility to step up and say, okay, I'm coming over, I'm bringing you dinner, or don't cook, I'm going to cook for you, or when's your doctor's appointment, I'll pick you up, I'll take you, and we'll deal with it together.
Absolutely.
That's the one thing I have to say that kind of surprised me. When I was taking my mom to chemo and stuff like that, seeing all the other individuals that are there, that the number of individuals that didn't have anyone
mm-hmm.
there
just
sitting there going through chemo with no one to talk to, nothing going on. It's just
nothing
like,
to distract them. You're sitting
yeah,
in a room.
It was like, I don't understand this. I mean, the nurses, when I would walk into a room, said, well, here's our help, because I'd be talking to all the women and the guys and that might be there, asking them if they needed anything, if I saw them kind of getting, you know, starting to cry and stuff like that, I'd be over there to talk to them. One woman says, you're here with your mother. Why aren't you taking care of my mother? I said, she's the one that's, you know, she's happy. She knows I'm here. I'm here for her. But you
mm-hmm.
need something, just let me know. I'm here to help you too.
Right.
It's no big deal. I mean,
yeah.
to anybody to just say, hi, I'm here. Do you need another blanket? You looking?
Yeah.
You need some water or anything?
Mm-hmm.
I'm on my way to get some water. I'll pick you up some water.
Right.
Just little things like that.
Exactly.
And that's my objective for the charity is that eventually, so I don't know how we're going to do it, but we'll find people that have the same heart
mm-hmm.
that will understand and that when you see somebody in need, that you'll basically just go and
do
it.
You just do it. You don't wait
yeah.
to be asked. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I have issues with a lot of people. I hear what you've basically said. People say, well, let me know what you need. And I tell them, fine, I need somebody to host an event. I need somebody to help us with this here. I need somebody to sit on our board of directors. I need somebody that will help us at a show type
mm-hmm.
of thing. I says, you know,
right.
you don't have to do much. I says, if you attend one of our shows, work with us in the booth, I says, you're still going to see the show. I mean,
right.
I told one guy, look, come, you'll see the event. You can check out the entire event. There's no issue there. You can help with the sales in the booth, handing out information and stuff like that. I said, but the big thing is that it gives me an opportunity that I can go to the bathroom or I can go get
mm-hmm.
something to eat.
Right.
And
you
it's
just
a big
need
help.
A break. You
right.
just need a break. Yeah.
And it's not like you're putting in hours upon hours of labor.
Right.
So, but most people, they verbalize, let me know what you need. Like one girl the other day says, what do you need? I'd like to help. I said, where do you want to start?
Yeah.
It's the, you know, anything that you need, you think you can do, I need that help.
Yeah.
So
why don't you, because some people need it spelled out. Why don't you, you know, I live in Kalamazoo, Michigan. You live in Illinois. Michelle, who's one of your ambassadors, lives in, I believe, Pennsylvania. So
right.
We're all spread out. So what, can you give me some specifics as to what exactly could you use help with tomorrow or next week? Is there office work you need done? Is there Facebook marketing you need done? What? Give me some particulars, and maybe somebody that's listening will jump in and help.
Well, there's a need for, like with our social media, keeping people abreast. So it's basically making posts to our Facebook, our Instagram,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that.
Okay.
There's somebody that knows a little bit about web design. We have two websites that definitely need upgrading and work on that.
Okay.
We've tried to go to different colleges and stuff like that where kids who maybe are taking classes and say web design or something like that and need
mm-hmm.
credit, outside credit, well, this would be an ideal project for
yeah.
them.
I got a guy in mind. Keep talking.
I mean, it's little things like that. We have a need for individuals to sit on our board of directors, as an example, which doesn't require them to attend any meetings or anything like that, except for maybe to get a phone call or email from me saying, okay, this is a project, this is the status of the situation, I need your input.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
basically there might be once or twice a year, if even that I need you to vote, give us a vote, like to give you basically
okay.
approval. Good example of that.
And how many board members do you have?
Right now there's two. We need,
okay.
we should have, not counting myself, we should have five.
So six altogether.
I'm looking
together,
for an individual
five
that... Yeah, there would be 500 individuals. And they should be individuals who have, say, contacts or, say, like an individual like yourself who has an outreach to different individuals that can basically tell people, like, hey, we have this program, blah, 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 type of thing. The board members are normally individuals who can help promote your program.
Okay.
Help raise money and things like that. Yes, there's administrative aspects that you might have to vote on, say yes or no to. But in our situation, most of everything is set in stone. It would be,
mm-hmm.
It was like
okay.
we just recently started a new program. Basically, we added on to our prosthetic program, which we provide free prosthetics and hopefully eventually augmentation for women who would like that, but for wigs, cranial aesthetics. And that's going to be for young kids and adults. High-quality wigs that will be provided for free. The only thing that's different from us in that regards is that once the individual doesn't need the wig anymore, we're asking them to return the wig
mm-hmm.
so that the hair can be reused and a new scalp
right. put on
form
so
can be made
basically.
For another individual. So
okay.
we're basically, it can be passed on. But
okay.
those are little things like that. It's strange to have somebody say, well, what do you need type of thing.
Yeah,
and it's
I know.
Like when you're doing everything, well, there's I would love to find somebody that's retired would be an ideal situation who likes attending motorsports events that eventually will take over the foundation
mm-hmm.
in itself.
Right. So how far – we've got about 10 minutes left, so I want to try to cover a couple things. But when you do events, how far, like, I know you do the one in Chicago. You live close. PRI is in Indianapolis. That's not that far to go. What would be the farthest they would go? Or give me an idea. You said you did 35 events. That's one every, not quite every week, but more than every other week. That's a lot of events.
Right.
So
we go up to St. Paul for the there's a major car show up there. It's a 3-day car show that's held at the fairgrounds. We've gone as far south as Memphis, Tennessee, for like the Super Chevy show that's held there at in Millington, Tennessee. We go to Indianapolis a couple times a year, a year. We've gone to Detroit for the Hydrofest, hydroplane event, several times. So it, basically, we've gone to, let's say, Lima or Lima, however you want to pronounce it, Ohio, for an event. If I get invited, we'll go as long as we can afford to go. Unfortunately, some places require a payment for the booth, which kind of inhibits us from attending.
You might as well
keep
that money instead of spending it out. Yeah, I get it.
So
it's
got to
be a big enough show that you think you're going to get more back than what you've spent out.
Right, and you have to remember is that when we do events, let's say there's a race at a track in Kalamazoo, and we get invited, and let's say they say, okay, you can come, but we'll give you the our charity discount, and it's going to cost you $400 for the booth. Well, okay, that $400 has just turned into probably closer to $800.
Yeah, double
we
it.
Have the,
you got
to
drive here.
We have
here
gas
and spend
to get over there.
Yeah.
We have a hotel now because it's, say, a 2-day or 3-day event, which means, okay, that's actually 3 or 4 nights for us. For me, type of thing.
Yeah.
And I say us because I usually drag my little pit bull with me. So it's food. And believe me, we don't, even when there's somebody that's helping us, if it's another guy, okay, you're going to share a room with us, with me. You might eat at Domino's or, you know, you're not going to eat at the first. So, yeah, we try to be as responsible in that aspect. I've told people, I says, if you're going to go to an event with me, you're going to eat what I eat and when I eat. So that's an issue. Feel free to bring your lunch pail with you because I'm not going to stop just for you. That's inhibited a lot of females from going on trips with us because they say, I have to, and I say, well, no, you don't. You're here to take care of the foundation. You're representing the foundation and so forth. An event could, well, when we went to Detroit 1 year, the people actually, we had to pay $2,500 just for the booth. And we were expecting like 100,000 people. We were told that there'll be, that many people for sure. All these major companies were going to be there and stuff like that. Companies were there and everything, but they stuck us in an area off the beaten track. Therefore, we didn't get the traffic, and we definitely didn't raise enough money to pay even for the booth.
Right.
And when they turned around and said, well, will you come back? I said, no.
No.
And I said, well, we'd really like to have you back. I says, well, fine, but we can't afford to pay you $2,500 for a booth and get stuck in a a spot where there's no traffic.
Right.
We eventually
here
just
I
said,
did
look.
That to me, unfortunately, the year I was there, and so I was not happy. But, when you're a nonprofit, they've got to realize you don't have the funds that everybody has. So, okay, you've given me some good information. You and I are going to need to talk again after the radio show's over this week sometime, because I got some ideas for you. So how would somebody get a hold of you? That's the last thing I'm going to make you tell me, and then I'm going to let you go back to watching TV or what else you were doing tonight. So if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, I know you have a Facebook page. What's the best way?
It's either on Facebook or direct email. And my personal email is D as in dog, R as in Robert, T-O-M, Tom, 46 at yahoo.com.
Okay. I'm going to post that on. I'm going to post a link for this show, and then I'll post that with it so people can get a hold of you. So we don't want somebody who is interested or has a heart, like you said. These are people who have a heart for women or men who've had breast cancer or are going through it, because once you've been through it or you have someone who's been through it, then it comes closer to you than just hearing about somebody. So I want to make sure those people can get a hold of you if they have the desire to help out in some way. You know, what I'm hearing is if you had somebody call who was having an event in, let's say, Ohio, and they wanted to offer you a chance to set up a table, that if you had an ambassador or someone that you could reach out to in Ohio that has a heart for what you're doing, they could do the event. That would save
True.
You a lot of time and travel. So the ambassador program sounds like it might be something that would work great for that. I'm actually an ambassador for you, and I've got some thoughts of my own about things that I can do to help you. Anybody that subscribes or that becomes a member of our association, we're giving a portion of that membership to your organization for the bag, right? The what's it called? The bag
with
some goodies in it. Yes, the tote bag.
It's our tote bag program, which is basically goes to individuals that are going through chemo so they can feel good. It's small stuff like lipstick, lip gloss. Little feel-good type of items. We don't ask for full-fledged items. We're trying to actually get with the companies that manufacture it and say, will you provide us with your samples?
Right.
Those are items that they give away anyway. And we just say, look, if you give us your samples, we'll throw them into the bag. But we're asking for companies that have non-toxic type of products, too. We don't want to hand out a product that is going to contribute to the cancer issue. But,
so we're out of time, Tom. We're going to have you on again. I've got the guy running my board has another show right after this, so I'm going to have to stop talking with you, but we're going to schedule you again. This has been great having you on. I appreciate everything you're doing, and we'll get this replayed so people can hear it, and thank you so much for being my first guest on my show tonight. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right. I'll be in touch.
Huge
thank
help.
You, Tom.
Okay, take
that was
care.
Tom Pollard with the World Motorsports Breast Cancer Foundation. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.